Again, we have with us the city planner for City of Ponderay, Kaylee Miller. And Kaylee, thank you again for taking time to come in.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I'll tell you what, why don't we start with a bit of an introduction? It's your first time here in the studio, and we have had Mayor Steve Geiger in many times, and we do like to check in with what's happening with our local municipalities, our cities, but first time for you, so give us a little bit about your background and how long you've been with the city.
Absolutely. So my name, as you mentioned, is Kaylee Miller. I am the city planning director and project manager, but I also oversee our community development, parks, street projects, pathways, kind of all of the above. I've been with the city for 8 years last October, so quite a while now, and worked with the previous planning director, Eric Brubaker, out there. And I've had the opportunity to work on some pretty fun and exciting projects, especially these last few years.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about some of those.
I do.
The city has got a ton going on.
We do. Anywhere in particular you'd like me to start, or just talking about the city?
A little bit more about
Tell a little bit more. And also, the city of Ponderay, I think for some of our listeners, aren't kind of clear on where it actually is. It really comes right up to Sandpoint. It's got a chunk of waterfront. But why don't you describe the city a little bit more and the population? Of course, we know that we have a number of the big discount stores there.
We do have a number of big discount stores there. In the last 3 years, well, from 2020 to 2023, Ponderay has seen just amazing growth with our population. In fact, we are the fastest growing city by percentage in Idaho. We had a 51% increase in population from 1,296 people to 1,956 people. This year, last time I checked the list, we had about 320 active business licenses in the community. So when you look at the percentage of businesses versus the percentage of residents, we're fairly unique within the state. And we do call ourselves the little city with the big future because we do have so much growth potential that's left in our community. And we're seeing people come in and want to live there, which historically we didn't see a lot of residential development. And that's been fairly new and very busy the last several years. Mm-hmm. So we've seen enough approvals for residential units over the last few years that it was almost enough to double our residential population and double our number of housing units if they all are built out before the projects expire.
Where are you seeing this growth for residential?
Gosh, it's been all over. We had a multifamily complex over near the Papa Murphy's area. We had another one that was a Schweitzer project that was on Triangle Drive. They built the first phase of that out with 84 units. It has a second phase that's approved with another 114 units and a daycare facility as a third phase. We saw the Retreat, which is over by the Elks Golf Course, which is almost fully built out now. There are a few lots left, and that had about 72 lots associated with it, primarily single family. There are approvals for an eightplex that was built and another one that is still yet to be built there on the highway frontage. And then the other thing that we've seen, which has been amazing, is a infill in our village, the Ponderay Historic Neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Those lots, I don't know if you're aware, but they were platted in the early 1900s, and they were done in a manner that they're 25 feet wide by 142 feet long. And that the intent behind that, as I understand it, was so that you could have every variety of people purchasing. If you had more money, you purchased more lots, less money, you were able to still have property and own it. And over the years, those lots have been developed with a single house on five or six lots. And we've seen in the last couple of years, developers in particularly coming in and they're purchasing those and removing the older homes and then developing them with new single family housing. Mm-hmm.
Another thing that might be helpful is what are the boundaries of Ponderay compared to Kootenay? Where does Kootenay is another little enclave. I don't know if you call Kootenay a city also.
Oh, yeah.
Kootenay is incorporated.
Village area? Is that to the right of Highway 200 as you're going out towards Kootenay? I mean,
it is to the right of Highway 200 as you head out towards Kootenay.
You need to take a trip.
I do.
It's between Highway 200 and
there's a city hall and a post office right there. Yeah.
There is. Yes. So our boundaries on the east side are at McGee Road. So that is south of Highway 200. Once you cross to the north side of Highway 200, they jog a little bit more back towards the railroad tracks. It's kind of a jagged line. And then to the north, our farthest north properties would be the Northern Idaho Power Sports and then the open fields that are across the road there. And to the west, it's broken at Sand Creek.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, pretty exciting on this growth, but what kind of challenges is that posing for the city just in providing the infrastructure and the utilities that are needed?
It is definitely a challenge. We've seen, like I said, so much growth, but our city historically has had so much more traffic and so much more participation from the county than just our residents. We're the economic engine for the county. We have the big box stores, the big businesses. So we see that traffic anyways on our streets. The hardest part about that is that with those big box stores, we bring in a lot of sales tax annually between $25 and $30 million. And that
state
money,
sales tax.
State sales tax, yes.
To be clear.
Yes, state sales tax, so the 6%. That. So that goes down to the state of Idaho, and they do what they call a revenue sharing formula. And by the time they are done sharing that out throughout the state, we get around $150,000 back. And the rest of it is distributed throughout the state of Idaho. And so that money is intended to be enough for us to do all the maintenance on those streets, create the infrastructure that's needed, and it just is not sufficient.
Yeah, with all the traffic that comes there, I mean, when people find this out, that you collect $25 million in tax, but you only get it back $125,000, it's a pittance compared to the amount that's collected there.
It's not enough to, as you say, maintain the infrastructure and the streets and things like that. So what do you do?
Well, the burden then falls on property tax owners, largely, right?
We do have property taxes that help fund our budget. We also have our bed tax, which comes in and funds a portion of that. And we've gotten creative. We've sought a lot of grants. We've been very successful in receiving those. We've done the local option tax to help bring projects forward to the community that we couldn't otherwise afford. And the mayor is constantly talking to people at the state level, trying to find an alternate to that formula. Mm-hmm. It's an old formula, and we're one of just a couple of communities in the state that are that unique with the businesses, because it is based off of your population, mm-hmm. which is ours is very small.
That's why you get so little back with such a small population, and the tax is shared according to population rather than where they're collected.
True.
Yeah. Yep. It cuts you down.
So just to be clear, the highways that run through to the north and to the east are maintained by the Idaho Department of Transportation, I would imagine, but the rest of it is on Ponderay.
True. There are a few that are private roads that aren't publicly maintained, but yes, for the most part, we contract with the Independent Highway District and they maintain our roads for us. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, we want to circle back on the whole local option tax and the bed tax questions. Both of those are going to probably come up for vote, as we were speaking earlier before we get on the air. So tell us about some of these exciting projects that are so visible. And let's start with the pond, this new ice skating rink.
The pond has been a really exciting project for us. For about 20 years, the community has been trying to bring ice to this area. But on a much larger scale. And so a group of hockey enthusiasts formed North Idaho Ice and partnered with the city in order to do that. And through a series of fundraising efforts and sponsorships and also grants that we were awarded, we were able to purchase the facility that you saw set up this winter. As a package deal, it came with the Zamboni, the chiller units, mats, boards.
This is just off of Kootenai Cutoff Road, close to the intersection with Highway 200.
True.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And also came with 350 pairs of rental skates. And so we've been able to offer that out to the community. And I think that the response to it has been even better than what I personally anticipated. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what to expect, but we have had over 10,000 skaters this season. And we've been able, because of the community's generosity in helping us purchase that, we've been able to offer free field trips to all of the schools in the area, private, public, homeschool groups, Bonner, Boundary County, and then even into Knoxon, Montana. So we've had 24 sessions of field trip groups, and those were a minimum of two classes, and some of them were entire programs. We can have about 120 people on the ice, so as many as we could get out there for each of those sessions. Mm-hmm. And that's been great because they struggle with wintertime activities for the kids.
Mm-hmm. Is there a little warming cat house where you'd put on the skates that you rent? Or
there is not. It's all outdoor and uncovered, and we've gone back and forth on whether covering it. But I personally love the light ceiling that we kind of have going on out there and just the open air. So we'll see where we land on that for next year. It's quite an expense to get a tent to put out there. And this is a temporary location for this rink. It will eventually be at the Field of Dreams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, part of the master plan for the Field of Dreams. Yeah, the times I've been by and there's just tons of people and kids out there, it's kind of heartwarming to see the way the community just like, bam, it really was indicative of the demand that we had for an ice skating rink. It's been talked about for years and years. Yes. And when there is good conditions and people can get on the ice, like at end of the Third Street, by this Third Street Pier there here in Sandpoint, you do see a lot of skaters out there, but our conditions are so fickle.
They really are. Yeah. The chiller has been a huge thing for us. I don't think that it would have been nearly as successful. Mm-hmm. We've managed to only have to cancel sessions for weather a couple of times throughout the season. So we've been very lucky this year.
What's the tiller?
The chiller.
Oh, the chiller.
Sorry, the chiller. Yes.
So that's under the ice. You have a series of something to.
True. There's a large metal cabinet that you see as you drive past. That's a mechanical unit that sends glycol through mats that are under the ice surface. And then that's what freezes it. Mm-hmm. And so in order to establish the ice, you turn that on, you cool it off. And we actually worked with Northside Fire, who was able to bring water out and help us slowly build that ice up at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Before we kicked off our first sessions on.
And you have a groomer, too.
We do. We have a Zamboni.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everybody loves the Zamboni.
They do. In fact,
they
most
love to
of our
say it. The Zamboni, yeah.
We had several sponsors that said, "We'll sponsor this if we get to run the Zamboni." Yeah. It was the most popular question.
Yeah. I think you mentioned, but where again did the chiller, did the equipment come from?
So we purchased it through a gentleman named Jerome Murray, who's in Coeur d'Alene. He has a refrigeration business and was part of the Coeur d'Alene recreational rink that they have set up down there. And so he had this rink. We contacted him and said, "Hey, do you know of any used, slightly used?" And he just happened to have it, and it was perfect timing. It actually came from San Diego.
Oh, really? Oh. Yeah.
What a great addition to our community. I just thinking, where do you take, if you're in high school and you find you want to go on a date, go to the skating rink on a date, or take the family outing on a Saturday. It's really fantastic.
That was my vision for it as well. And one of our former city council members, when we started down this path, that was what she said. She could just imagine being out skating around, holding hands with her husband under the lights. And that was just her vision for it. And I think what's made it so successful is that we have a group of people that have different visions, but we've been able to pull it all together and bring in not only that public skating atmosphere, but also we do stick and puck sessions and drop in hockey. In fact, this coming weekend, we have our inaugural 3v3 tournament out there. So there will be tournament-related skating on Friday night, and then Saturday and Sunday all day, there will be a series of upper-level and lower-level division hockey games going on. People are welcome to attend.
Come watch that, yeah.
So with this warmer weather, that's not going to affect it because you have that chilling thing underneath. So how far into the 50-degree weather can we go before it starts being affected?
So that's yet to be seen, but we actually chose to close the rink. Last Sunday was our public skating finale for the season, just because we are seeing those warmer temperatures and rain in the forecast and things like that that are not very conducive to skating. Mm-hmm. So
this might be a last hurrah this weekend.
This weekend will be the last hurrah for the season, and then we'll pick it up again in the fall. Mm-hmm. We're going to continue our fundraising efforts out there. Any additional funds that we raised through ticket income or sponsorships all get rolled into an account, and those are earmarked for a future facility out at the Field of Dreams, which would be a four-season indoor facility built in phases. We like to do the stair-step approach, but that money will all help bring that to fruition sooner.
Okay, right. Well, let's segue right into the Field of Dreams.
I have one more question about if folks want to, not now because we're kind of winding down the season, you have the hockey thing going on this weekend. People can go out and watch that. It doesn't cost anything and it might be really fun. But to use the ice, there is a user fee, except, you know, when you bring in the schools and stuff. Where do you go to find out more about the pond, as you call it?
We have a website that is skatethepond.com. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Skate the Pond.
Yeah. And you can always also contact me at City Hall.
And you can get tickets online or
Tickets are all online. It's card only, so they're purchased in advance.
Okay.
And our ticket prices include rental skates, so it's all inclusive. And we were able to keep the cost very low, $10 for children under 18, $15 for adults. And then we put into effect a family rate. So if you have a larger family, we cap that at $50 for the entire family up to 10 people.
Mm-hmm. And we're all talking about next fall at this point, because there's the skiing season's over except for this event this weekend. But I imagine you can get too many people. So Is it advisable to get one in advance online, or can you buy just at tickets at the site?
So we can help purchase tickets at the site. It's much easier if people do it prior to coming. What has been very interesting and a learning experience for me this year, especially with scheduling out there, is that most people don't purchase their tickets until a couple hours before the skate session. So I may look at it on Saturday and there's nothing for Sunday, and then we have sessions that sell out or fill up on Sunday. We did only have a handful of sessions that sold out completely, so people were able to buy them at the rink for the most part, but I anticipate it's going to continue to grow and get busier and busier.
Yeah, so plan ahead. At least a day, it sounds like. Well, let's segue right into the Field of Dreams, since that will be the future site of a skating rink, probably a bigger production at that point. I think that's called for in the plan. But tell us what's up there, because you've made some amazing strides at the Field of Dreams. And this is the set of athletic fields that are just north of town as you go north on Highway 95.
True. Yep. They are accessed both off of Oneida, which comes off Highway 95, and off of McNerney Road, which is under construction and being rebuilt this year and last fall. So out there with our first phase of the local option tax, which was a 5-year phase, we were able to put in place 4 fully lit artificial turf fields out there. So those fields are actually going to be opening up this Friday and will be playable this early in the season, which is a huge game changer for this area.
Because kids used to had to wait on these grass fields to get into condition, which might be several weeks away. Yeah,
true. My son played soccer all through school, and the very first tournament of the season is Mother's Day weekend, and oftentimes they'd only been practicing outside for a couple of weeks, and it made it really hard to be competitive. So this year, they'll get the opportunity to start at the beginning of March and have those practices in, and we have a number of groups that are using it. They're very anxious to get it open, but we're out there. We had to switch gears from the pond this week to the Field of Dreams. So they're out there putting up nets and getting everything ready so that can start. And we have a number of tournaments that will be held out there this year, starting, I believe, the earliest one I have scheduled dates for will be the lacrosse tournament that comes in May.
Mm-hmm. So it's not just soccer, it's lacrosse, soccer, and other field sports.
True. We open it up to anybody who wants to use it. We have the fields are all striped for full-size soccer. Some of them are then cross-striped for a mid-size field, and there are tick marks so that they can be striped for youth-size fields for recreation soccer as well. And then we have our field number 3 that is also striped for lacrosse in both the full-size fields and the small-sided fields. Mm-hmm. And then field number 4 has the tick marks to be able to stripe that out as well.
And what about softball and baseball?
So we don't have any facilities for them, but I did receive a call yesterday that I'll be talking with today for one of those groups that wants to come out there, because there's no reason they can't be out there hitting balls and practicing, throw out some, you know, bases on
the fields
turf.
Fields aren't striped for a game, but you could sure use them for practice. Yeah.
True. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Is that part of the plan? Well, tell us about the master plan for the Field of Dreams going forward.
Sure. We have a concept for the entire 50 acres. Right now, the development that occurred this year is about the bottom third of that, the southern third. So it has our restroom facility, concessions facility, and then those fields. And one thing that is really interesting, and I'm going to start with this, is that this project was 31 years in the making last year. Mm-hmm. The first time that property transferred for this purpose. It was last October, it was 31 years. So that's
my son actually played soccer out there way back when they had it set up for kind of rough fields that they had. Yeah.
Yeah. They had originally worked with local farmers. They went out and tilled and planted, but there was no irrigation. And so it was very dry very quickly. And also our soils do not drain well. So it was very wet in the spring, very dry in the fall. My mom always called it the Dust Bowl because my brother also played soccer out there. So it was really great. And we were able to, at our grand opening, our ribbon cutting, bring the children of the two people who sort of spearheaded that effort, Floyd McGee and Mike Reed, to that and participate in the ribbon cutting, which was very heartwarming to see them there. And they were very excited to be a part of something that their dads worked so hard on. So I'm really happy that we were able to do that. And going forward with that design for that full 50 acres, we have a lot of other amenities that are proposed. Again, it's concept, so it can be fluid. We design only the phase that we're building at one time as far as our final engineering product goes. So that way we have the ability to be flexible and make changes as we move forward. But the concept plan currently shows an indoor ice facility And we have some sort of videos that show how that could be done as basically a covered concrete slab with the boards that we've already purchased, and then eventually enclosed and having locker rooms and concessions added onto that. We have a playground area, a picnic area, a tournament pavilion. There are food truck spaces that are identified, a field house, 3 to 4 baseball and softball fields, one of which, and I say 3 to 4 because that area is designated as a flex space. So it could fit a 4th field. It could be a community center. It could be courts. And the idea has always been that we're not trying to replace what Facilities Standpoint already has. There's no reason for us to be competing. We're trying to accentuate what's lacking. And so as we go forward, we'll be looking at each of those facilities, seeing if it's still necessary based on the changes that are being made, and deciding what goes in. So, for example, our field house could be turf. It could be gym space. It'll be really interesting to see where the needs fall once everyone starts transitioning, because right now all of our gym space is being shared between all of those outdoor sports that are wanting to be outside on the grass. And so there's not enough gym space. But once those have the field of dreams available, once those have the field of dreams available, then that will free up more time within the gyms, and maybe there won't be a need for additional gym space. So it's going to be a learning experience all the way through.
It's always a need for more basketball courts.
Yes, Chris, that is so true. This is a lot of projects, and this is a big expansion. The idea of coordinating with Sandpoint's needs and providing that and understanding, and it's changing all the time. There's a lot of revenue that has gone into these projects. As you say, 31 years, Field of Dreams has been in the making, and you've gotten the 4 fields now and some infrastructure. But what is the funding process or revenue sources for these? I mean, obviously you're getting some money back for through use fees, but that's not paying for it.
That's true. That is not paying for it. So this project was funded through our local option sales tax that we passed. It was a 5-year tax that expired at the end of December. That money was earmarked right off the bat for 2 projects, our underpass project and our Field of Dreams project.
It's the underpass to reach the lake.
The underpass to
we'll
reach the lake.
We'll swing back on that one.
We'll swing back on that one. And so those funds, we spent about roughly $10.7 million on the facilities that are out there out of this first round of the local option tax. And that provides, like I said, not only artificial turf that you can get on early, but our skies get dark early in the evenings most of the year. And so they're all lit to a high school standard, so they can all be played for any sort of sports into the evenings. And what that does, not only allowing our local folks to participate in that, but it also opens up enough fields that are guaranteed playable in the fall where we can have those state tournaments in our area and where historically we never could.
So the local option tax was the engine. I mean, realistically, there'd be nothing happening at the Field of Dreams or these other projects you mentioned had that not passed 5 years ago. In November, it was back on the ballot to be reauthorized, and it did not pass. And I just dug up the numbers on it. 267 people voted against it. 263 voted for it, which is kind of indicative of the fact that you only have, 600-some people that vote. And the population, I mean, that's, I don't know what that percentage is of your population, but the voter turnout, A, could be higher. And B, you not only need to get a majority, but you need a 60%, I think.
Is we that do.
Correct.
Yeah. We need over 60%.
So I know the city is intending to run that again in the fall. So anything you want to shout out about the mechanics of that? And has the city defined how that money might be spent? Like they earmarked the last time for these big projects.
True. I think we will continue with what the projects were last fall when this ran on the ballot. One interesting fact about it is that when this passed the first time in 2020, it passed by literally a single vote. One vote.
You got this 60% plus one vote.
Yes.
That it put it across the finish
60.
line.
60.02 is where we ended up.
Yeah.
So it was a stressful election night as we watched those numbers come in, but we were so excited to do it. And without that funding, yes, you were right. This project would absolutely not be there. We received some grant funds to get us started with planning efforts and design, but not nearly enough to move forward with any of the construction. So that will be going back on the ballot in November with similar use categories. So what that list entailed was a continued growth at the Field of Dreams, continued funds towards the underpass project. But in addition to that, we added a $500,000 a year that would go into streets, maintenance, and construction, any of those excess projects, because right now our annual budget for street projects is about $220,000. So not enough to build much of anything unless we save for several years. And then also the first $1 million to go into an endowment account that would be left alone to collect interest until it reached $2 million. And then that would be our funds going forward to maintain the facility and the turf and keep that in good shape. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not worth having if we can't keep it nice and in great condition for the community.
Mm-hmm. That's forward thinking.
What does a local option tax look like? Was it 1% on sales tax?
True. It's an additional 1% on sales tax. So the 6% is paid straight to the state. And we talked about how those funds are allocated. The 1% is open only to recreational communities with population of under 10,000. It has to be passed by the voters. And so we call it the penny tax. It's essentially one penny on every dollar or $1 on every $100. And that is charged at every Pend'Oreille business. And we did structure the first round, and I believe we are this one as well, with a cap at $1,000. So any transaction that's over $1,000, then we do not collect the 1% on it. And the reasoning for that was our businesses reached out to us when we went for this the first time. We hosted a meeting, and their big concern was the types of transactions where people are price checking them against other communities. So vehicles, building packages, steel packages, and where that 1% could make them less
competitive.
Yeah. So we chose to do it that way. It was a little bit of a struggle to get that instituted at some of the businesses. Some had an easier time with it than others, but that raised over $15 million for the community over that 5-year period. And that's money that comes directly to Pend'Oreille. No one else touches it. We control it completely, and we're able to put it into those very specific projects.
Mm-hmm. And the kind of the big feature of this kind of tax is that everybody who shops in Pend'Oreille up to $1,000 purchase is going to kick in a penny. So if you buy $100 worth of groceries, it's going to cost you a dollar. And that tax is paid by the residents of Pend'Oreille, but it's also paid by everybody else that comes there. So effectively, the residents of Pend'Oreille would leverage their purchase, the amount of tax they pay, many times over by all the other people that come and pay, and we'll end up using these facilities as well.
And that's exactly why it makes so much sense. This is a regional facility. It's not something that's just there for our Pend'Oreille residents. And so it provides an opportunity for all of the users to pay for that. Not only our local people who are coming in and who are traveling in to shop at our stores, but also the people that are coming in for tournaments and things at the facilities as they're staying in our hotels, buying meals, they're contributing right back to that fund.
It's important to know the details. I just want our listeners to know this is 88.5 KRFY, your community radio station, your independent listener-supported community radio station. And we're here today talking with Kaylee Miller. She's the city planner of Pend'Oreille, the little city with a big future. We're talking about, it's a lot of stuff going on there. So we're really going through it. We just talked about the local option tax that will be coming back on the ballot in November and how it really works. And I think an important thing for people in, well, to know is that anyone buying anything in Pend'Oreille, if there's a local option tax of 1%, it's tourists, it's people from Sandpoint. It's important to know how it works.
Yeah, and we have had the mayor of Sandpoint on here, and he's mentioned that the city of Sandpoint's intending to run their local option tax proposal again in the fall. So that would kind of even up the two cities, right? If people are really dead set opposed to paying that 1% right now, they can choose to shop in one city or the other. But if they both have that tax in place, then the cities don't have a competitive disadvantage, so to speak. So you also mentioned earlier that And Ponderay does have a bed tax. And that is also going to come up on the ballot. Is that correct?
That is going to be on the May ballot.
The May ballot. Okay. Tell us about your bed tax.
So our bed tax is a huge source of our funding to operate the city. It is paid on hotel rooms by people who are coming into our area, in addition to the state recreation taxes and things like that. And so we have been charging 7% to date, and we will be looking at increasing that to 10%, which is still substantially less than what the Sandpoint bed tax is.
14% mm-hmm. now, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes, but that money then again will be brought in folds as those people come in to use the facilities at the Field of Dreams. They'll be staying in our hotels. That pays into the bed tax. They'll be shopping in our stores. That pays into the local option tax. And all of those just bring dollars back in for us to spend on things like maintaining those roads and building these facilities.
And how much does the bed tax raise for the city? Do you know that number?
3%, I believe, is... Oh, sorry. Overall, what it raised?
Yeah. Yeah. Annually.
I don't have that total.
Okay. You know, I think this, it's not like a weird tax to put on. It's common.
It is very
In resort communities.
Yeah. Yeah, in any community. I don't think I've ever stayed at a hotel anywhere.
I was only paying $80, but now it's this. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's the other tax.
And it does go to the local community to help them defray their costs, providing all the infrastructure and even things like fire and police protection. So that'll be on the May ballot. As long as we're talking about the May ballot, I know there's going to be a couple of city council seats that are up for election as well. We don't have the names of which ones there are going to be actually be on the ballot. But for folks in Ponderay, you have stuff to vote on coming up in May.
We do have stuff to vote on coming up in May. Our city council members, their reelection is in November. So
that's also in November. Ballot. Okay. Yeah. Well, is there anything out on the May ballot other than... other than the bed tax?
We don't have any other measures that I'm aware of.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for clarifying that. That will be on the November ballot for the city council seats that are up for election. And the mayor's seat is not up for election. So it just will be probably two city council seats.
True. It will be council member Larkin and council member McNerney.
Okay. And we don't know if they're going to file for reelection, but...
As far as I know, they both are.
Oh, okay. Good. Good to know that. Well, another project that was funded by the 1% tax was, I think you call it the Front Yard Project?
We do. It's the Front Yard Project is sort of a combination of several different projects that we're working on to try to clean up the contaminated soils along the waterfront. But also, we have about a mile and a half of waterfront and no legal way for folks to get there. And so we've received grants for both of those projects. So we have a brownfields cleanup grant. It's a multi-purpose grant that is working on the Black Rock area, working to clean up the contamination on that side along
with some... It's a slag pile that looks like a rock. It looks like a natural rock, actually.
It does look like a natural rock unless the sun's shining on it and then it's a little sparkly.
Yeah.
But that was has been there forever. It's a local kind of landmark that everyone knows. So we are looking to preserve that with the design, but also to provide the protections that are needed through breakwaters and capping the slag pile so that it can still be there for people to see and know, but not have it leaching into the water or the soils.
Grants like EPA grants?
So that one is an EPA grant, and there's also some additional funding that will be coming through the bill funds and some being provided through DEQ. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a combination source. And then
are those grants secured at this point?
Yes.
Because there's kind of a big cost-cutting move federally going on.
So the bill grant is the only one that I'm not sure if those funds will still continue to come in there on hold, but the other ones are designated for us. So I'm hopeful there's not going to be any more changes that would jeopardize that. And hopefully we'll be able to move into the construction phase of that this year. We're working through some of the final state historic preservation requirements at this point and some environmental requirements. Once those are done, then we'll be able to start that construction. And the idea is that we clean it up and then provide sort of the start landscape for a future park along the waterfront. And then that will also include extension of the Ponderay Bay Trail.
Right, right. Yeah, this whole waterfront is along the Ponderay Bay Trail.
It is, yeah. And we've
accessible now legally only from Sandpoint, because in Ponderay you have to cross the railroad tracks, and that's it's technically trespassing.
So true. What's the plan to make it accessible?
So the other part of this project is our build grant, which allows us for a design of an underpass to the waterfront, and then also a 30% design of the Highway 200 corridor for improvements there and its connection to that underpass. So we're working through those design efforts now. With an engineering firm, we are getting pretty close to having at least our layout that will be out there that will accentuate our existing stage facility that we have at Harbison Field, where we host our events for the community currently. And then it will provide parking spaces and things like that for that underpass. And then we're actively seeking grants to try to fund the actual construction of it. It's a huge dollar figure associated with that underpass. We don't have final numbers yet, but it's extreme. And so even the local option tax won't be enough to pay for that in full, but it is going to be enough that we could provide matching funds to make us competitive in the grant market.
How about the railroad chipping in on this?
I hear that all the time. We have not at this point been able to convince them that that's a fantastic idea to do, but they are working with us on our designs, doing their internal engineering reviews currently. So
I can imagine the underpass has to go pretty deep to support the tracks above it.
True. There will be a substantial lowering of the grade on the west side of the tracks in order to get underneath the tracks at their existing level. Initially, the plans looked at grading the site all the way from the west edge of our property down to the underpass. Current designs are more looking at some sort of a retaining wall that would tier it and allow for parking, but also preserve the space for the facility.
Parking on the not lake side of the underpass.
True. Yes. We are sizing the underpass so that it can have two fire trucks pass each other at the same time, but it is not intended to be open for vehicular traffic. We just know we will never get another chance at it. Mm-hmm. So we want to make sure that it's substantial. The only traffic that we've considered and we haven't fully decided on would be the ability for a drop-off area on the other side so that the handicap accessible pathways would be more accessible to people who are participating in that.
Mm-hmm. Big project.
And this is contiguous to the park area you have secured behind the Hoodal. Is that right?
True. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. The access would come through that property.
Yeah. And what's the name of that park?
We call it Harbison Field.
Okay. And are there plans to develop a big chunk of that? That's part of the plan you're just talking about, actually.
True. We want to make sure that we keep that as a community asset. And so that design looks at inserting a playground area, some restroom facilities, protecting the space where our beautiful stage is that was built with donations from the community. And then also reserving some green space so that we can continue to hold our fall Neighbor Day event out there. Mm-hmm.
Are there other events held there in that park?
So that's our big one. We do have some lacrosse groups that use it for practice in the off seasons. And I would like to get more activities going out there. We've been slowly every year sponsoring the event through businesses. And then anything that's extra, putting that into savings. And we've been able to use that to upgrade the facility. So we worked with Avista. They brought in power for us. We worked with Gardner Custom Homes, along with several people who donated materials in order to construct first a stage, then a cover over the stage. And we intend to keep those in place and have maybe some more designated food truck space and just a little bit more defined area.
Outdoor concerts?
I would love to see outdoor concerts. And actually, we're looking at some sort of like an outdoor slope that would make it almost a dish in front of the stage, sort of like an amphitheater on a small scale, and allow for more of that.
All right. Live music.
And Ponderay Neighbor Day is held in, is that September?
It is September.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if any of the listeners haven't gone to that, it's a ton of fun. I've been to a couple of them.
Did you take your granddaughters there, Chris?
No, actually, this was pre-granddaughter days when I got out there. But it's a good thing to take kids to. It's a wonderful little family event.
It is, and it's completely free. So that makes it great for the community. This year's event's going to be held on Saturday, September 13th.
Okay. Save the date, folks.
Just listening to you talk about all the aspects of Ponderay, it's not really that little of a city with a big future. There's a lot of infrastructure and dynamics. You have a big job.
I do have a big job, and it is constantly changing. I always say it's other duties as assigned because I do a huge variety of things. I get the opportunity to plan all of these community events as well as work on the infrastructure and help with, well, I do all of the review for our independent developers as well. So we have a small staff. There are six of us total, one maintenance person, myself. We just added an assistant planner to help me out with that. We have a GIS technician, and then we have a clerk and a deputy clerk, mm-hmm. separate from our police station.
Mm-hmm. And how many police officers do you have? What does the police station look like?
The police station is in the log building that's over off of Highway 95 that we received from Idaho Transportation Department. Mm-hmm. And we have a chief and currently, and I'm going to get this number wrong, but I believe about five officers. Usually we're aiming for having seven. We've had a position that's open that we've been trying to fill for some time. Mm-hmm. So that's almost operates like a separate quadrant of the city because they're in a separate location, but we all work together. I drag those guys out to all of the public events and give them the opportunity to have that positive interaction with the kids in our community. Mm-hmm. And they're great.
So don't be speeding on Kootenai Cutoff.
Very true.
That's the street that's, you got to remember it's 25 miles an hour there. And and they want you to go 25 miles an hour there.
They do.
There's a lot of activity. And there's also a neat little park. Speaking of all the great parks, there's also a neat little dog park now that's right next to the animal shelter. Is that a city-owned property? Is that the part of the shelter?
So it's land owned by the shelter. We helped build that facility and helped maintain it, but they also work with operations there. And that's also part of our McNerney Park, which is the community park just to the north side of that, on the back side of that berm you see from Kootenai Cutoff Road. Mm-hmm. And that's where we hold events like our bike rodeo and community barbecue, which are going to be coming up on May 18th.
Yeah, there's kind of a little bike track there, right?
There is. There's a pump track back there.
For kids to bike around on. Yeah, it's kind of behind the actual dog park, yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. for our bike rodeo, they put that to good use, and we block off the street, and we work with the Safe Routes to School coordinator from the school district and also the Ponderay Peddlers bike group. They come out, and we set up safety activities that the kids can do and participate in to learn, but also the Ponderay Peddlers set up a tent and help look at the bicycles, maintain them, get them things that are fixed that may be broken on them. And then we do our toddler drag race and a couple of other competitions out there as part of that.
Mm-hmm. How fun. Mm-hmm. Just a little side note. KRFY has its transmitter at the school district office out in Ponderay. So our legal ident, which you have to say at the top of the hour, is this is 88.5 KRFY Ponderay. So we say that a lot during the day. So we're partners.
That's
we're
wonderful.
Happy about that.
The more partners, the better.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Kaylee, what else do you want to tell us? We're kind of come up on the end of our time anyway, but are there some things we missed? One thing I wonder about is the water situation. Because water to Kootenai and Ponderay, are you part of, are you purchasing water from Sandpoint? Is that what I understand?
Residents purchase water from Sandpoint. Sandpoint owns the water infrastructure and they bill the landowners directly for that. So we are, that is really our only water source besides Northside Water, which provides only residential and only in certain parts of the area. Mm-hmm. So that's been a challenge in the last couple of years. We've seen some areas where they've raised concern about deficiencies in fire flow. So that's something that the cities are going to need to be working together on over the next couple of years to find a solution for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very real need with all the growth we're seeing. Yeah.
It absolutely is. Probably one of our most limiting factors. Mm-hmm. As far as other things that we didn't talk about, I'm not sure if you guys are aware, but several years ago, the city purchased the historic schoolhouse. It's the last remaining historic building in Ponderay, just around the corner from City Hall. And so one of my projects this year that I'm working on will be to rehabilitate that structure and create a community center in the neighborhood with that. So that's going to be a big one. We are able to use our ARPA funds that came from the COVID era to do that. And I've also applied for a couple other smaller grants, and we're going to be working with the community to see if we can get some of them to participate as well. SOK Architecture has participated and helped us with design work, our preliminary designs. So that's sort of my next big project on the agenda.
How many square feet is that building? Do you know? Just roughly.
1500 to 1800. It's not huge, okay. But it is. When we first looked at it and went to go buy it, I was kind of wondering if we were going to be able to do anything with it. But when you get inside, while it needs a lot of upgrade, it still has the amazing old 12-inch casings around the floor and even some slate chalkboards that are actually laid with real slate over the plaster on the walls. So there's a lot of it that we're going to try to preserve and keep as part of the community.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's cool. You can have a community hall there for the residents. And yet little downtown of Ponderé is going to probably flourish. It's always kind of felt like a neglected backwaters area when I've been through there. But you can see that there are and Ponderé hasn't felt like it's had a real downtown. You know, it's so spread out. But you can see that there's the nucleus for a neat downtown area for Ponderé.
There is, and we have such a blank slate. We're working on updating our comprehensive plan right now. So we've been looking at land use scenarios out and around the Field of Dreams and what might come that way and future changes that we might see with this growth. Mm-hmm. So big things to come.
I'm going to drive out there and drive through town. I want to see. I've never been there. So
Sounds like you do. Yeah,
I do. Right. Well, thank you so much, Kaylee Miller, for coming in, city planner and director in the city of Ponderé. The little city with a big future.